Okay, so it's the top of the hour. I'd like to welcome you all to the Peace Alliance monthly national field call for the month of November. Ngozi or Jill, will you wave if you can hear me okay? All right, great. So it's great to have you all with us. Welcome. My name is Dan Kahn. I'm the National Field Coordinator for the Peace Alliance. And I really appreciate you taking time on this Tuesday evening to spend some time with us. I'm about to review the agenda, but first I want to really thank you in what I think most people would agree are challenging political times, challenging cultural times, that this is a place where you find yourselves tonight. The fact that you choose to come together here in this community, to me, is a source of strength and inspiration. So I really appreciate the community and the commitment to peace and harmony and progress that it shows me that you're willing to come here and go this deep for the political work and the personal work that we want to do in the world. So thank you, each of you. In a moment or two, I'm going to introduce our Cultivating Personal Peacebuilding Council lead, Ngozi, who will introduce our special guest, Joe Weston. And Joe's going to speak for a little while, and then we'll have a chance for discussion. Then we'll hear an update on the Department of Peacebuilding campaign from Nancy Merritt, and then we're going to review our monthly action. I want to make a special note now. Everyone who's on the call should have received an email in the last half an hour with an action sheet that you can download. So please take a look at that sometime in the next half hour or so, if you haven't already opened your email, and have that action sheet available that you can look at on your computer screen, or even print out if that's more convenient for you. So you should have an email in your inbox from me with a downloadable action sheet. So we'll review the monthly action, have a little coaching or preparation on that. And then we want to hear from folks in the field. That's any of you that have something to share about what's happening in your neck of the woods, in your campaign work, in your organizing, or in your personal peace building work, or any remaining questions you might have from stuff that happened earlier on in the call. And that's the plan for the next 58 minutes. So without further ado, I want to gratefully welcome. Ooh, I might be muting folks if I hear background noise. So you're welcome our Cultivating Personal Peace Building Council lead, Ngozi Akosua, and she's going to tell you about our very special guest for tonight. Welcome, Ngozi. Can't hear you yet, Ngozi. Are you muted on your own phone? You're unmuted in the system, so is there a mute on your end? Try again. Don't hear you yet. I'm sorry, you're unmuted on my screen. I'm not sure what's not working. Do you want to try calling in on your phone? You can stay on the computer, but also use your phone to dial in. And I think while you're doing that, are you going to go ahead and do that? Yeah. Okay. I'm going to wait and let her introduce Joe. I'm very impressed with what I've heard and read about Joe Weston, but I'm not going to take Ngozi's thunder and try to introduce him yet. I think I'm looking for Nancy.
Miss Mommy.
In a second. I'm going to mute folks. In case anybody new comes on the call. So folks are muted. Just waiting for Ngozi to dial in. I don't think that makes sense to try to squeeze something else in. I was going to juggle the agenda, but I'm just going to pause and we can have a meditative moment as we prepare for Ngozi to dial in. I can tell you a little bit about the upcoming action. Well, let me tell you a bit of the content of the call. On the call tonight, we're going to be talking about personal peace building. We're also going to be talking about cultural peace building in the context of elections. Okay, we just had midterm elections across the country, and some of them are still going on. There are recounts happening hopefully in Florida and hopefully in Georgia. That's my own personal bias. I'm sorry, I'm pulling for a recount. And also looking at peace building on the historical racial perspective. So there's really a lot of substance that we're looking for on tonight's call. And Ngozi, are you still not hearing you? Sorry. Dialing in. I think I got a thumbs up and she's pointing to her phone. Maybe I will. Still no sound from you, Ngozi. I'm sorry to say. Maybe try without your headset, unplug in case your headset is the problem, unplug your earbud and just talk directly into the phone. Make sure your phone's not muted. Strange. Okay, we'll go ahead. So I'll tell you what little I can tell you about Joe Weston. It looks, as I recall, a 30-year career in coaching, teaching around mindfulness practices based in Eastern spiritual traditions, as well as modern psychological understandings. He teaches at Georgetown University in the School of Conflict Resolution. And as I recall, it's a body-based peace-building practice course that he teaches, a conflict resolution connected with somatic understandings. And he works internationally with corporations and institutions. And I've been impressed with everything I've read, so much so that I've ordered his book, and I look forward to reading it. So I really hope I can hear you when you start talking, Joe. Let's hear what you have to say.
Hi, Dan. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Thank goodness. I did.
Great. Well, you did a great job. Wow, you have a good capacity for listening and retaining information. Good for you. Well, thank you for the introduction, and Ngozi, thank you for inviting me to this call. And it touches my heart. I met Ngozi, I think it was around 2008 at a Peace Alliance conference in Berkeley, California. And we had I felt a really strong heart connection. And at that time I was living in the Bay Area and I was doing heart walks, I was doing one in San Francisco, which was I would take a map of a city and map out a route in the shape of a heart and walk that as a peace meditation with others. And it wasn't against anything. It was for peace. It was for deepening of connection. And that was my connection with Ngozi. And I've followed the Peace Alliance and have been so touched by the work that you've been doing. So it's an honor to be here. And I hope that anything I offer could be a support in increasing your capacity for the work that you're doing. And if there's ways that I can support, I would love to do that. So my name is Joe Weston, and I just started this evening. It's a very auspicious moment for me. I just started my first really official Respectful Confrontation teacher training. That's a 6-month program, and the group is, we just gathered this evening, so that's why the lighting may be a little strange. And we're in the middle of this process now. And I want to just say a little bit about what Respectful Confrontation is. It's a method and a practice that I developed that has helped me and has helped others to stand in your power, speak your truth, get your needs met in a way where you don't get harmed and other people don't get harmed. And I really developed this from a lot of, as Dan said, my practices in martial arts, as well as particularly the softer martial arts like Tai Chi and Aikido, of understanding the dynamics of force and power. And the work is really about really reframing how we look at power, how we look at confrontation, how we look at assertiveness and aggression. because I was noticing that there were a lot of people in the world who were doing amazing work, but weren't feeling fulfilled and satisfied, or they weren't feeling like the work that they were trying to achieve was having the impact they wanted to have. Or I was seeing that people were burning out and getting discouraged. So this work is really about how to support people to be more impactful without the process of burning out, in a sense. And I started this as a practice for personal freedom and development, and also in terms of collaborative engagement. And then started getting invited to do work in organizations. I've been working at NASA actually for almost 10 years doing trainings, and as well as other organizations around the world, working for government agencies. And what I'm most feel most blessed with is the opportunities I've had to, for instance, to work with incarcerated men, teaching them meditation skills and leadership, reframing power and leadership for them, and working with severely wounded combat veterans. And just, I don't know if you all know the suicide rate of combat veterans. It's now 20 per day of actually veterans who actually kill themselves, that not just attempt suicide, but actually succeed. And that really hit my heart and wanting to support them with their PTSD and how to not feel so isolated and to communicate. And most recently, since 2014 now, I've been doing work in the Middle East, working with women's rights organizations and supporting them and advocating for the rights for women and girls. And I've been working with a project now in Gaza, which created a whole program called Transformational Leadership for Lasting Change, which basically is a program for them to train men how to go back into their communities and train men how to stop beating their wives and how to advocate, actually become ambassadors and advocate for the rights for women and girls. And this is where I really have been taking the work in terms of activism, is what actually does create transformation. What actually creates lasting change, or you could say lasting peace? And I find that that's an important aspect to look at, that there are organizations like yours, and there are many organizations that are really looking for hopefully quick solutions to problems, to really see how can we change policy? And what does it take to really get a culture or to shift their habits or their viewpoints and their patterns? And so I really got into a deeper analysis of what actually does it take for people to actually transform, particularly people with power. So a lot of this is also, how do you address power over and shift a lot of the viewpoints to. And what I found was that there are some very key things that one needs to be involved, particularly I would say for activism, for people to actually go through the process of shifting their habits, their viewpoints, and their patterns. And the basis of that is safety and trust. Is that, in a sense, if you're doing work around wanting to create new policy to shift people's perspective, particularly people in power, how do you do that in a way that they can still feel that they're safe, that they can still feel, and how can you gain trust? and that is, in a sense, shifting certain perspectives around that. And I find that, you know, I've been talking a lot about this with, for instance, with our current midterm elections and doing a lot of work around civility. In fact, I'm leading a few different projects now. And for those of you in the DC area, every month, I'm leading a meetup group called Courageous Civility. And I use those words particularly because I think we're now living in a day and age where you actually have to almost have a warrior spirit to cultivate civility. That's where, you know, when you're in a culture where on some level the bully is being celebrated, it takes a lot more work to be civil and not get caught up in that polarity, and to cultivate that in your workspace, or in the work culture, or your home life and with people you're working with. I'm also leading every Tuesday online on Zoom, every Tuesday on the 11:15 Eastern Standard Time, something called meditation for lasting peace. And again, it's what is it going to take to create lasting peace? We can sign treaties and we can develop peace, but is that really going to shift people? People are still going to hate each other. People are still going to be frightened of each other, or they're going to bully each other. What is it going to take for us to take on that responsibility to cultivate a deeper level of what I would call resilient power and fierce compassion, where we can actually address not only those that we get along with and agree with us, but also have the skills and the courage to talk to people that are different. One thing I always say to groups that I work with, if hanging out only with people that agree with you were going to solve our world problems, we would have already solved our world problems. So in a sense, what is it going to take for us to really make that effort to communicate with people that are different, that do hold different views, and call to maybe shift their viewpoints? So the work that I'm doing, particularly with activists, and particularly around social change or racial or economic justice transformation, is what is it going to take to make what you might call the opponent or those in power more receptive, more malleable, that they might be open to shifting viewpoints. One of the things that I always say is I bring in a concept called of really understanding the depths of, you can just visualize it, my truth does not equal the truth. And I find that that's an important starting point. Whenever you're having difficult conversations, in a sense, oftentimes what we want to be a productive conversation, creative conversation that leads to new solutions, they often end up in conflict, because whether we're aware of it or not, we're still approaching it from this place of I'm right, and if you have a different viewpoint, you must be wrong. And so, in fact, one of the lectures I'll give to activists is how your need to be right is sabotaging your mission. And I'm curious if someone else, if you all have ideas about that. And it's because what it comes down to, and that's what I'm noticing is what's happening in our country, and I'm seeing it around the world when I'm traveling to Europe and other parts of the world, is that we're so in this place of polarity. We're so in this place of us and them that we're not even talking about the issues anymore. And that it's no longer about the issues, it's more about how we're presenting the issues. So the respectful confrontation work is really addressing not so much what you're saying, but how you're saying it. That, of course, the issues are important, but how can you be more skillful and flexible and resourceful and resilient in how you're approaching something and how you present it, that you can actually get people to engage in the conversation, even if it's a challenging conversation? And a large part of the respectful confrontation work is learning the resilience to know that those transformation is always uncomfortable. It'll never not be uncomfortable. But do we have the resilience to stay regulated? And that's where the work I do at Georgetown comes in the Department of Conflict Resolution, the School of Government. It is a body-based practice of actually cultivating a deeper level of regulation of the nervous system, so that you can be more aware when you start getting into your triggers, your fight, flight, freeze response, that you can make different choices. Or when someone else gets into their fight, flight, freeze response, that you, first of all, can set boundaries, make sure you're safe and you can take care of yourself. And once you're safe, make sure you don't get dysregulated, and actually find a way to use their dysregulation, their resistance, as a way of deepening the process. I call it the resilient edge of resistance. And for me, that's an important part of and skill of activism, is you want to get people into a place of resistance, but a manageable resistance that gets them actually to a place of creativity where new solutions can emerge. And that's I'll finish with this because I'm sure my time is going up. This idea that I use the two words respectful confrontation, because people often say when you bring these words together, there's like a tension in it. And that's the purpose of it. And the fun thing of it is, in the polarity, is that some people say, oh, I've got no problem confronting. I can say whatever I want, get what I want, but not realizing it might be at the expense of the relationship or hearing someone else's truth. That's part of, you know, I can share my truth and am I willing to hear someone else's truth? And you know who you are if you're the one who's really good at confrontation. And some people are really good with the respectful part. I'm the peacemaker. And many of you up on this call are probably very much that. I'm the one who takes care of everyone. And that's a great quality, but not realizing that it may be at the expense of your own needs, getting your own needs met. So the idea is to learn a deeper level of where I don't have to be a victim and I don't have to be a bully. We crack open that polarity and we develop what I would call resilient assertiveness, where we can be in the dance of resistance and know that if we can stay in that with respect and honor, that that's where new solutions will emerge. And people have said that when they've done this work, that in the past where they found that there were no new solutions emerge. Because you get into that kind of messy, alchemical, creative place. And we need to regulate our nervous system in that and still connect with one another's humanity to be able to maintain that. I'm going to take a breath.
That was wonderful, Joe.
I can go on.
Now let's open it up for some questions.
Thank you.
Folks, you can raise your hand if you have the Zoom app downloaded on your phone or computer. You'll be able to raise your hand with the hand raise feature. If you're on your phone and you're not on your computer, you can press *9 to raise your hand. And if you're on a computer without the app downloaded, then you'll have to show us your video and actually raise your hand physically. But Joe, I've got to tell you, I'm thinking if I find myself in the DC area for any extended period of time, I want to go back to college and take your class. That's I love what you're saying.
Let's bring it to you.
let's find some ways. I love it. I really appreciate what you're so much of what you're saying. I wrote down fierce compassion, resilient power, the resilient edge of resistance. Those are, I just came from a class of teenagers and we're working on, you know, peace building education and learning empathetic communication skills. And what you're talking about is very much alive in the work that I'm sure many folks on the call are doing. Looking for a hand is if there's anybody who has a question for Joe about anything he's talked about, I would love to hear it. I'm seeing Kat raising her hand and you're unmuted. So go ahead, Kat, what's on your mind?
Yes, I have a question. I am a core alignment coach with another program. And I started creating what I call POW tribes, power of wisdom. And it's basically geared towards women and creating these circles of women who help each other learn about diversity for themselves, their families, and then taking it into the communities. And for me, this was just my way of bringing peace to the self, to the families, and then to the communities. And from these tribes would promote out to more tribes, so they would multiply. And so getting it off the ground is probably the most challenging part, like getting people to buy in. How do you get people to buy into this type of way of thinking? And I use neuro-linguistic methods for the coaching, and so it's very mind, body, spirit. And so that's the style that I'm using.
Do you mean how do I get people engaged to get to show up? Or once they're shown up, how do I get them to commit to practice?
To get them just to show up.
That's always the challenge. I think I don't know if this directly connects, but let me try and see where I go with this. You know, when I said that one of the things that I discovered and that I'm using in these transformational leadership for lasting change is how do you address power over? And that by using bullying to address bullying isn't really going to lead to anything different.
Right.
So you know, what I offer is, and I think you've even mentioned it. So the formula that I would use to overcome power over to shift the culture is starts with power within.
Mm-hmm.
So you're cultivating that. And then once you've developed a level of power within, you naturally, you don't have more fierce compassionate resilience, and you're just radiating it if you really are embodying it. And that will attract others. And that leads to the second part of three, which is power within to power with. Mm-hmm. As you start creating alliances, as you know, and if it's two or three, you create a stronger force. And that's the last stage, which can really create change, is power to. So once you start with power within to power with, you have a stronger alliance, then you can be of service to those who are in need and are seeking more connection. And that takes time. And I think the reason why I say that is because I think a lot of times with we think that we have to address the very thing that needs to change. Or, you know, for instance, I'll say that I'll get called in for a lot of discussions around, if I may, around Republican, Democrat and the polarization there. And I would say that there's no talking on a sense to the extremes, whether they're on the extremes on the left or the right, yet. But there's an enormous amount of people who are malleable and receptive enough to want to be engaged in conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And when more stronger, and in a sense, we think that the people on the extremes on the left and the right are very powerful because they're loud, and not seeing that there's a lot more people who, to use a really bad term, are in the middle, are really seeking out ways of connecting. I think there are a lot of people who are hungry for it.
A strong desire
to connect with people who are resonating with the principles that you're bringing up, Kat.
Yeah.
And it's just a question of finding a way to appeal to that.
Yeah.
And without anybody can actually say, I can feel safe here. That's one end. That's always the thing, is how do you get people to show up?
Yeah.
And I think it has station that I use is it's in your vulnerability that your true power is revealed. And that, so a lot of the work is understanding the power in vulnerability of cultivating a certain level of open-heartedness that is literally attractive from an electromagnetic perspective. And for those of you, I'm sure there's got to be people on this call who know the HeartMath Institute that they've done. And one of the statistics that I use in my book is that the electromagnetic field of the heart is 5,000 times stronger than the brain, and that it can actually penetrate through flesh and bone. So as we cultivate this idea, as I say, resilient power, fierce compassion, we're becoming more they may not understand it here, but the nervous systems are saying, this feels safe.
Okay.
I can be vulnerable here.
Yes.
And I would say the more you're doing your practice from an authentic place without any expectations of changing anybody.
Yeah.
I think that's a way of attracting people. And one of the principle of people, but you can influence behavior.
Right. I get that. Right. Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you for the work you're doing, Kat. Thank you for the work
you're
doing.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Kat. Got a few other hands raised. I see a few of them. I'll go first with Tara, because she both raised her hand physically and electronically. So go ahead, Tara.
Great. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello. Are you able to hear me on the line? I'm not sure if I'm unmuted. Okay, great. Well, I just wanted to first thank you. This is a really interesting conversation, and it's always great to join these calls and get some deeper dialogue on the peace perspective. Just looking at peace from a policy point of view, and a lot of times I feel like the peace discussion is framed inside of a kind of a war context. Like, you can understand the cost of war, But can you understand the cost of peace? And does it make sense to look at it from that perspective? And you can understand kind of the impact of war, but can you understand the impact of peace? And again, does it make sense to even look at it in that framework? And I wonder if you could kind of comment on that sort of dichotomy, because that's something that comes up a lot. And maybe even just talk about how you feel peace works from a national policy point of view, if you have anything to say on that. Thank you.
Thank you. I can talk about 4 hours on that. I'm not really a policy person. For me, it's all coming from the individual. And the way I would frame that is that it's a shame that we're at a time where we actually have to sell civility, where we actually have to sell peace as a concept to get people to buy into it. And I think that from a national perspective or from a societal perspective, in a sense, you can shift systems and at the same time approach individuals. One of the quotes that I actually use often is by the Peace Pilgrim, who said, "We're not going to solve our world crime and war and hunger until we each look at our own personal psychological violence and take steps to alleviating that." And I think the more that we cultivate that within ourselves, one of the projects, another project I do is called Occupy Your Heart, is, you know, what are the aspects in yourself that whether you're aware of it, are still getting into this polarity, as you're saying, and we're so wired in a sense in our modern culture for war. And I think the more that we really cultivate that sense of peace and we share that with others, I think that's where it starts. I think that's where, the power over peace is, you know, how do you go to corporations and tell them to stop, you know, or talk to people and say, maybe you can buy products elsewhere. Yeah. Or maybe you can shift your perspective on what you're doing with your own personal resources. Again, I'm not a policy person. I'm more on the personal development kind of thing and your personal involvement in that. So I don't know if that resonates or helps in any way.
It does. And I really appreciate the answer. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tara. Thanks. I want to recognize Jean because Jean definitely had her hand up at the get-go. Jean, do you still have a question? I can unmute you. There you go. Wait. Why am I not able to unmute you? Oh, there you go. Try talking now. It's very hard to hear you, Jean. I think you're looking for your headphones. Okay, I'm going to mute you for now. While we're waiting for Jean to find her headphones, Terry Mason, our board president, asked me to make sure to point out to folks, since we're talking about civil dialogue, that we do have a statement and a platform around civil dialogue on our website. So encourage folks to check that out at peacealliance.org. We've been promoting that the last couple of months for folks personally to sort of take that to heart as we engage in political discussions, to really be as centered as we can and respectful. And also to bring that to your elected officials if that's something that you're prepared to do. So if you want a little bit of guidance around civil discourse, we've got something that we've come up with on our website. I don't see Jean. Oh, there she is. Did you find your headphones? Looking for them, haven't found them. Okay. I'm sorry. Well, maybe you can, if you want to send me your question, Dan@peacealliance.org. I will happily forward it to Joe, and I bet he will be gracious enough to reply. Let me unmute you again and see if we can.
Dan, you're on mute. Dan, you are muted.
Got it. Thank you, Terry. So I don't know what the last thing was that you heard, but Jean, to you, I asked if you have something you want to share, please. I could hear you, but it's very garbled. It's hard to make out. So go ahead and send me an email if you want to email your question to dan@peacealliance.org. It's Dan at, okay, thumbs up from Jean. Great. And I'll forward that to Joe. So Joe, as I was saying, thank you so much. It's been really an inspiration. I look forward to following up personally with you around several of these resources and ideas that you mentioned. And I imagine other folks will as well. Your book is about respectful confrontation, easy to find if they search Joe Weston and respectful confrontation on Amazon or elsewhere. And if you want to stick with us for the rest of the call, you're welcome to, but we also understand if you have any place else that you need to be tonight, we'll happily let you go. So thanks again. Any last words that you want to share, Joe?
I just want to say that, if you do have any questions and want to reach out, please do. The book is Mastering Respectful Confrontation. The website is respectfulconfrontation.com. And I'm always looking for ways to support, particularly with an organization like yours. And, you know, and just leave you with this idea that, especially after after this last midterm elections and going into Thanksgiving, that these are times where it really challenges our resilience. And that to get to a point where whatever the results were and however they affected you from this last election and however that's going to be taken into your own personal life with your family or with the people you work with, this is the time for us to really take care of ourselves in terms of a level of self-care. It's really a time for us to cultivate that resilience. Because at this moment, it's when we're great, most needed to come with a sense of courage and a sense of respect and honor, and honoring the humanity of us all. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Oh, Ngozi's voice. I think I'm gonna go. I'll leave you. Oh, that was Ngozi, I heard.
Yes, I finally got on.
Yeah, unless
I'll let Ngozi say her final thanks and farewell if she wants to.
I so appreciate you, Joe. Thank you so much for showing up for us and sharing your gifts and your passion. We really appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I think I'm going to leave the call and let you go on. But if you have any other questions, please get in touch.
Okay.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Next, over to Nancy Merritt for an update on the Department of Peacebuilding campaign. Nancy, you're on.
Okay. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Wow. Amazing. So I'm sorry, Joe just got off. I wanted to thank him, and we did go on one of the heart walks with him in the Bay Area quite a number of years ago, and really appreciate his work since then too. So thank him, and thank you all for the call. I just wanted to take 1 second to kind of have a shout out for all the victims of the fires in California and all the recent shootings. I just can't even keep up with the number of mass shootings. It's astounding. And let people know that on our monthly California call last night, Jerry Condon from Veterans for Peace was on the call. Did a really good talk about reclaiming Armistice Day for peace. And if anybody wants a copy, to hear a copy of that audio link to that, you can write to me, Nancy at peacealliance.org. Let's see. I guess I will start with quick update. The bill, are, as everybody knows, we have a bill in Congress for a Department of Peace building. We were recently in Washington, D.C. for advocacy days, and as a result of that, we have a couple of more people who came on as co-sponsors, Yvette Clark from New York and Marcia Fudge from Ohio. And so we currently have 43 co-sponsors, which is good. I mean, it's, you know, in this climate, I think that's good. We also, of those 43 co-sponsors, 40 were reelected to Congress. So we have a pretty good start for next year. And the three who replaced the ones who weren't reelected, two of them are the two Muslim women. And one is a gentleman from Colorado who's pretty a very progressive African-American man, and so we're hopeful that maybe we can get those folks back on. Wanted to also let people know we have a Department of Peace building campaign call that's open to anybody that's interested in being part of our work. It's now the third Wednesday of every month, and the next one is on the 21st of November. If you're interested in being on those calls, you can write to me and we'll put you on the list to get notice of that. Right now we're working on rewriting, working with Barbara Lee's office to rewrite the bill for 2019. Probably won't be many drastic changes, but we always find some things to kind of update it and modernize it, I guess. So if anybody's interested in being part of that process, we have a pretty short deadline on that, but write to me and I'll send you the form that we're using for that. And then we also do a Holidays for Peace thing where we contact as many co-sponsors and others as possible, just to tie in peace building and the Department of Peace with the holidays, and it's just a good way to keep up the connection and the reminder that we always want more people to co-sponsor, and we're hoping that most people will become our original co-sponsors. And probably the bill will be reintroduced in February. I also, so I don't have to go through the long thing, I also just sent out an e-blast about what we did in Washington. There are now 5 articles about that posted on Movers and Shakers, and a couple of them one of them deals with sort of the atmosphere and all this stuff we were encountering relating to the Kavanaugh hearings. One of them talks about our legislative visits. There's another one Ann Kreter wrote about Toronto. We were part of the World Beyond War conference in Toronto and gave a panel discussion with the Canadians on departments and infrastructures for peace. So you can go and check that out. And then there's we posted Barbara Lee's letter, which was written for attendees there. So if you want to know more, you can go to the website and look at all those. So the bottom line is we visited over 140 offices, including both House of Representatives and Senate, and had scheduled meetings with 24 offices and a lot more informal meetings. We delivered some very heartfelt letters from kids in San Diego who were talking about their perspective of violence and their real need and desire for peace and the Department of Peace building. And one of the kids wrote in her letter that she hopes for a world where they don't have to fear about where and how to hide during a mass shooting in their school. And another boy said he hopes we can one day be a country where no one is a victim of domestic violence. So there are a lot of poignant comments. There's an article about that too. So I hope you check those out. The other takeaway, I guess, from this is we advocated for 10 different bills in including the assault weapons ban, condemning violence against children globally, and establishing a select committee on gun violence prevention, no money bail, violence against women reauthorization, and a couple of others. And of those, 64 co-sponsors came on board after we were there, or as a result. Not all of them were because of us, I'm sure, but at least 34 of those were from offices we visited. So that's just a kind of a high level review. So please check out the articles, and thank you all. And if anybody's interested or has questions about any of this, feel free to write me or check out the website.
Thanks so much, Nancy. And that movers and shakers section, is that on the website, on the column on the lower right corner of the
it's
homepage?
It's now at the bottom of the front page, and you'll go and you can see a whole bunch of pictures of articles, and click on those, and that opens the various different articles.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you. I encourage anybody who has any questions, as Nancy said, to contact her directly, nancy@peacealliance.org. And there's plenty of information on our website as well about a Department of Peacebuilding, what it would do at every level, from schools to neighborhoods, families, and internationally, as far as conflict resolution tools, and a real platform for research and promotion of the best technologies for reducing violence and promoting conflict resolution. So let's jump into looking at that monthly action. As I mentioned earlier, you all should have received that confirmation email, which has a downloadable action sheet. And I asked Lori if she'd be available to sort of be my ready-made volunteer. I volunteered her. What's the word? Voluntasked. So Lori, I'm going to unmute you. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Dan. The word is voluntold.
Voluntold. I voluntasked, didn't I?
Yeah.
Lori, will you read aloud on the first part of the action sheet from the very top right down to where it says background info?
Yes, let's see. From the very top to background info. Okay, writing and pitching an op-ed piece on American truth and reconciliation. On these two monthly calls, we'll be discussing the new National Peace and Justice Memorial and Legacy Museum and the truth and reconciliation process this memorial may facilitate. This action invitation is threefold. One, continue to explore and learn about this issue by reading materials from these and other sources. Web links below. Two, use the template on the other side of this sheet to craft your own brief essay, 500 to 600 words, regarding the truth and reconciliation process and the Peace and Justice Memorial, urging local officials in your area to begin this process. Even if you are not in one of the 805 counties with a known history of lynchings, there are likely race-related historical wounds that can be brought into the light and healed. Three, send your essay to a regional or local newspaper, check their website for length and any other requirements, and please email dan@peacealliance.org to make sure you are the only one submitting to that paper. Start with the biggest nearby paper. If not accepted, try smaller local ones. If not accepted, share via social media.
Perfect. Thank you. So a little bit of background for folks that maybe missed our earlier calls when we talked about this or are not aware of this. There's a new memorial and museum in Montgomery, Alabama. It's called the National Peace and Justice Memorial and Legacy Museum. And it's a very interactive, powerful sounding exhibit. I actually plan to visit it in Montgomery this December. And what it is a demonstration and information memorializing the racial violence in our nation's history, particularly between blacks and whites, the racial violence towards black people, the history of lynchings and Jim Crow-oriented violence leading up to the present day. But a lot of it focuses around lynching and the real terror of that and the need for a restorative process, for a nationwide process of truth and reconciliation. So within this museum, there are 805 metal monuments, one for each county in which lynchings have been documented. And on those monuments are the names of the people who were lynched. And then in the field surrounding this collection are replicas of all 805 of those monuments. And those replicas are available for each of those counties to claim, to bring home, to initiate their own truth and reconciliation process, to come to terms with our own history of racial violence and what the impact has been and how can we address it as a community and move forward with some healing. So the impetus around this campaign of ours at the Peace Alliance is to promote awareness of this new memorial and museum, and also to promote action on the part of communities around the nation to take steps to initiate these conversations and these processes of healing, bringing these things into the light so that they can be healed. Lori, will you do another little reading for us?
Sure.
On the second page, will you read the section? And this it starts toward a deeper justice. And this is just quotations pulled directly from the website of the Equal Justice Initiative. Equal Justice Initiative is the organization that's led in part by Bryan Stevenson, who many of you will know from his amazing work as a civil rights lawyer, as a death row criminal lawyer, and his book, Just Mercy, which I cannot recommend highly enough. So Lori, will you go ahead and read that section?
Sure. EJI believes that publicly confronting the truth about our history is this first step towards recovery and reconciliation. The history of racial injustice must be acknowledged, and mass atrocities and abuse must be recognized and remembered before a society can recover from mass violence. Public commemoration plays a significant role in prompting community-wide reconciliation. The National Memorial for Peace and Justice provides a sacred space for truth-telling and reflection about racial terrorism and its legacy. EJI's sites are designed to promote a more hopeful commitment to racial equality and just treatment of all people.
Thank you. So that will hopefully give folks a taste of what this project, this initiative is about. And there are links on the action sheet to the EJI website. There's also a link to an article about one county that may be on the edge of engaging in this process, Alachua County, here in North Central Florida. There's some other material there about the meaning of reparations, if it comes to that, what reparations might look like and on various levels. So this is a lot to take in. I encourage folks, as the action sheet suggests, one, continue to educate yourselves, and then use the template above what Lori just read. There's a template for, I think it's 7 paragraphs of an op-ed piece that you can write. And I'm happy to look at drafts. I have a strong background in editing and giving advice on people's writing. So I'm happy to give you feedback on your drafts. But it's not rocket science just to construct a 500 or 600 word piece about why this is important and why you think your county should engage in it. And my plan is that on the December call, we'll focus more on pitching these pieces to local papers. So once you choose the papers that you're interested in pitching it to, there's a whole other step of cultivating a little bit of a dialogue with the staff of your local newspaper and making it fit what they're looking for so that you can actually have it published. So I was going to have Lori do a role play of that conversation, but I do want to leave at least a few minutes for some field shares. So I think I might leave it there. I encourage folks to start doing this research, start creating your essays. Think about what papers you want to publish this to. Look at the action sheet. It's kind of step by step, and feel free to email me with any questions about that or drafts that you'd like me to look at. So in the last 5 minutes, we got 6 minutes, so five of them. Love to hear shares from the field and or any questions or reflections on what's happened in the rest of the call. Nancy's still here, so if you have questions for her, I'm sure she'd be happy to field them. I'm happy to answer any questions that I can. So hands that were up before from when Joe was talking, I put all those hands down. So if you had your hand up and you wanted to ask a question, you'll have to put your hand up again. So anybody who has something to say, you can, I think if you're on the phone, you can press *9. And if you have the app on your computer or phone, then you can just press hand raise. And if you don't have the app, you'll have to show yourself and wave your hand to get my attention. And if I don't see any hands go up, then I'll ask Lori to go ahead and role play that conversation with the newspaper. Don't see any hands up. Oh, Terry's got something to say. Terry Mason, one of our fabulous board presidents. Trying to unmute you. There you are.
Hi, Dan. I don't want to cut Lori off at all, but I just want to stress, pardon me, I was very touched by Joe's piece, especially the part when he was talking about civil dialogue. And our Declaration for Civil Dialogue, as Dan said, is online and available. If you go to the homepage and scroll down to the bottom, it's one of the most recent updates. You can go to the link to sign our Declaration for Civil Dialogue. It's so important right now. I mean, the election it's still ongoing in some states. And it's very clear that we are clearly divided. We're a divisive society right now. It's very clear that we have a lot of work to do to come together. And the Peace Alliance is very focused on finding common ground and finding ways to connect with one another and reaching out with empathy and compassion to other people, even if we disagree, as Joe is talking about. If we disagree, we can disagree, but to have a conversation that's civil and to, you know, to understand each other's point of view, be willing to be impacted by another's point of view, be willing to possibly shift if another's point of view impacts you in a different way than you weren't expecting. All of those things are critically important as we move forward, because we have become very divided in our society right now. And it's very important from a peace building perspective, but also from a policy priority perspective. Excuse me, I have terrible allergies right now. But I just wanted to chime in at the end and just put a button on that point, that all of us here on this call have a lot of potential power in our communities to do a lot of connecting. And I encourage everyone to do that.
Thank you so much, Terry. Jane, are you trying to talk? I heard something. I can hear you and I can make out the words. They're still somewhat distorted. You can try and see how it goes. I'm sorry, Jean, it's not quite understandable enough. You'll send a message. Okay. Thank you. Really sorry about that. Okay. I didn't catch that, but I appreciate you keep trying. Okay, does anybody else have something they want to share? We've got just about less than a minute left, so not time for a role play, but just rest assured, you can do it. You can talk to those people at the newspaper, and you can get your op-ed published. So go ahead and start writing, and just trust that we're going to walk you through it, because it can happen, and it can really shift minds and hearts and experiences. in the last 30 seconds, I did have two quotes I was going to share, but I was inspired by something that Joe said to actually quote him in the closing quote. So I'm just going to, I'll share all three. The first one I had in mind was the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. That's Martin Luther King, of course. The second one was love and only love can conquer. And that's Bob Marley. And the one that I got from Joe was, it's in your vulnerability that your true power is revealed. So thank you all for coming, for sharing, for being open and caring. And I am going to unmute everybody so you can say whatever you like to each other. You all a good night.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for hosting the call. Good luck with your writing, everyone. Yes. Have a good time with that writing. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Namaste. Peace. Thank you.